Kathy Kelly from Voices for Creative Nonviolence recently returned from a visit to Afghanistan to meet with peace activists. Also on the visit was a nurse, Sarah Ball. I spoke with Sarah at her home and began by asking her about her previous work in the anti-war peace area.
You know what? It was actually relatively decently for me. I've only been interested in political things for the last 3 years or so. About 7 years ago, I started volunteering. I started volunteering with the Missionaries of Charity, and then I found out about the Catholic Worker. Then I kept volunteering, and I kept getting deeper and deeper into relationships with people who were involved with the peace movement one way or another, and eventually I was in Chicago working with the Sukasa Catholic Worker that helps women and children from South America who were have been affected by domestic violence, and I met a woman named Rosalie Riepel who said, "Oh, you should talk to Kathy Kelly and Voices," and I said, "Who are they?" This was about 3 years ago, so I called them up, and they invited me over, and I've been keeping going over ever since. I've been living myself at Voices for about a year and a half now. About 2 years ago, I went on my first trip to Afghanistan. As part of the Voices, team, I went to Iran last spring as part of the Code Pink delegation. So I've been getting involved more and more in the last couple of years, and trying to catch up on all the things happening around the world that I missed when I really honestly wasn't aware.
Let's start with Iran, the delegation, the Code Pink delegation. What was it like for you?
I was coming in with a lot of preconceptions based on my previous trip to Afghanistan about a year before that happened. I'd done a bit of traveling in the Middle East, so I was going in with all this information I had learned from other countries in the Middle East, and it honestly turned out quite different than I expected. I tried to do a lot of reading about Iran before. Me and the other person born was Sean, read a whole bunch of books, so we knew about a bit of the history and how the U.S. has interfered in the region and all of that. But I was absolutely not prepared for the level of openness in gender relations, I suppose I'll say. And, of course, we were in Tehran, and I'm sure it's quite different in the villages. But even though women there are required to wear headscarves, they could be quite a bit freer about it than they were in Afghanistan. And I just found that they went around and did everything and can hold almost every job that they wanted and seemed to be quite comfortable speaking to men. And many people seemed quite comfortable, with some exceptions, speaking about the government. So we did have a lot of very interesting conversations with the people there.
Can you talk a bit more about those conversations?
They were very various. One of the places where there were the most conversations was in the city of Isfahan, the other city that we visited, which is one of the historic cities of Iran with a very long history, and I don't know much about architecture, but mosques dating from, you know, many hundreds of years ago. And in the bazaar there, which is just, I can't tell you how beautiful it was, the bazaar set surrounding two mosques, the shopkeepers in the bazaar were just really easy to talk to. I set off from the group at one point and walked around the bazaar, which is quite big, just looking for conversations to see what I could see. And I had people approach me and say, "Oh, you know, where are you from? Are you from America?" Because, you know, even though I was wearing a headscarf, not too difficult to tell, I suppose. And I was invited out for coffee. And people very obviously wanted to get into conversations about politics and world affairs. And they asked my opinions, and they very frankly told me theirs. We did find somebody who liked Trump, curiously enough. That wasn't usual. We found a lot of people who were very irritated by the sanctions and told us stories about how their family members and friends had been affected by medicines not getting in. And people were just astoundingly frank, for the most part.
There were 28 of you on this delegation. What was the main foci?
I think the main focus was to find out about how the sanctions were affecting people. We did get to listen to the Foreign Minister Javad Zarif speak, and we got to sit in on Parliament to speak to some of the women parliamentarians. I think there are something like, there are about 15 women parliamentarians out of, I'm going to make a wild guess, something like a couple hundred. We got to do quite a lot of meetings with women who were in business there. We got to see the university and talk to some of the university students who were studying Middle Eastern studies. And I did get an email from a couple of them, and we've been in touch. So people from all over the spectrum, people from all walks of life, who were very interested in talking with us and forthright.
They were concerned that things could get a lot worse?
Yes. People were quite worried about what could happen between the U.S. and Iran. And, of course, now we know in the past weeks we have even more reason to be worried. But yes, there were concerns about that, but I will say that one of the qualities of Iranians that I learned about in the reading I had done, and which I did definitely find out when I was there, is that Iranians are a very proud and resilient people. One of the members of our delegation, who is a professor of, I think, political science in the Middle East or something like that, mentioned that there was a poll done among most of the nations of the world to try to find out who was the most patriotic and had the biggest love of their country. Most of the countries in the world, it was Iran. And I think the reason that's important is that the U.S., who really is mostly often concerned with making other nations bow down to it, won't get very far by trying to browbeat Iran. It's really the completely wrong tactic. Because Iranians will, as they should, take it as a condescension and as an offense. And especially recently, with President Trump trying to ramp up the sanctions, that really will just make the Iranian people be more offended and saying, well, bring up the sanctions, you know, we'll show you. So especially regarding the Iranian people, U.S. policy has not been a helpful strategy in any way whatsoever. The Iranians have a very good sense of their own importance in the region, of their very rich history, of all the different ethnicities and religions that really do form a part of Iranian culture. One example is that many Iranians love poetry, and they have lots of Iranian poetry memorized. And when we were visiting one of the mosques in Isfahan, a lot of the Iranians would write up the poems as kind of like graffiti in the mosque, but it wasn't a bad thing to do. It was accepted. So when you walked through the mosque, there was all this Iranian poetry that people knew by heart. So people know their own culture, and they value it.
Were you able to get outside the main cities?
We weren't very much, which was really too bad, but it makes sense. The Iranians were understandably a bit nervous about having us in, as they should have been, because of the, you know, ways that the U.S. has interfered in their country and politics, beginning with the 1953 overthrow of Mossadegh. So our visit was a bit curtailed, and we did have, you know, people watching to make sure that we just couldn't wander off and talk to anyone, even though quite a few of us did get to in Isfahan. So we didn't really get, it wasn't really long enough to go more into the villages or the small towns. So I would absolutely love to get a chance to go back there and see many of the villages. Incidentally, one of the things that I love is Iranian film. Iranians have one of the greatest film industries in the world, and I've watched quite a number of Iranian movies about life in the villages. So I was really hoping to go in, hopefully sometime.
Was there one particular thing that you brought back with you from that visit, or were there so many?
I think the thing that I brought back, really the richness of the conversations that I had with people. One of the friends that I was able to make was a young woman who loved English literature, and she told me that she never gets a chance to talk about English literature because, you know, most people in every culture don't like to read long novels, but also because it was English literature. So we talked about Middlemarch and, Jane Austen and Dickens, and then Russian literature as well. people were extraordinarily friendly, and I really value the people that I met over there. And I think it's really important now to continue friendships with other cultures and in other countries, because now, especially when people are divided and when there's so much, so many lies being spread, it's really important to, relationships are one of the most important things. And I'd say the same about my travels in Afghanistan.
Let's talk about Afghanistan. As you said, you've been there, you were there 2 years ago. How do you compare your latest visit to the first visit?
I found that people seemed, and of course this is a very superficial observation, in the sense that somebody, you know, coming for a week, 2 years ago, and a week now wouldn't quite be able to tell, but I found that people seemed a bit more tense and a bit more worried about how things might turn out. My two visits to Afghanistan are always marked by conversation, conversation, and conversation, because in Afghanistan, everyone sits around, sits in rooms together and outside together and drinks green tea and talks. And talks very seriously about ideas and about the country and with the people I was with, nonviolence. And of course, so all of that was the same 2 years ago and for this trip that I took a couple of weeks ago. But I just found that more people were being killed by Taliban, by U.S. bombings, drone bombings that often killed many civilians, and that there are starting to be warlords who are rising up to, you know, to confront the Taliban, which puts the country at some danger of civil war, and families in some of the provinces overrun by the Taliban are starting to be torn apart because, you know, you'll have a father who is anti-Taliban and a son who, you know, is for the Taliban, because somebody told me the Taliban says to young men, you know, come with us, we'll give you a gun and a motorcycle, and, you know, what 19-year-old young man wouldn't be tempted by that? So things have gotten a little bit more worrisome in a lot of ways, and the water situation, which was drastic 2 years ago, has gotten worse. So if you live in a small village in Afghanistan, the streams, the rivers have gotten smaller, the wells have to be dug deeper. So there are a lot of reasons for worry on every side, and it just seems, from what I could tell and from what people told me, that things have gotten a little bit worse all the way around. Especially because, as I heard, in the last year, there were many more killings of civilians than there had been in previous years. Why that is, I'm not exactly sure.
And that's part one of a longer interview that I recorded with Sarah Ball, peace activist from America. And on the program next week, we'll hear Sarah speak more about her visit to Afghanistan outside the city of Kabul.